they hate nanotechnology, and I am not 100% on what nanotechnology even is, so I refer to all technology as nanotechnology. And in particular, when it's misbehaving technology, that is especially nanotechnology.
So it's episode 4 of Horizontal Hostility, and we wanted to have a conversation about ITS, also known as Individualist Tending Towards Savagery or Individualist Tending Towards the Wild. I don't know. They have different names that they go by, but it's kind of most commonly what they're referred to as. But
the thing we were just talking about is that literally yesterday evening, three people in Portland were stabbed by a white supremacist, kind of wingnut, nihilist dude, who killed who was harassing two young girls of color, it sounds like, one wearing hijab on the light rail here. And three people moved to defuse the situation and confront him, and he stabbed three of them at least, and sliced the necks and murdered two of them. So we're all kind of still reacting to that news right now.
Yeah, it's kind of the elephant in the room, I guess.
It does kind of, I mean, it feels a little opportunistic to do this episode, even though we've talked about doing this episode for a long time, right after that kind of event, because of how, I mean, he openly announced on his social media, and when he went to white supremacist rallies and the like, he called himself a nihilist and an anarcho-nihilist repeatedly. There's no response of that. And the indiscriminate attack of him murdering three people randomly, and him also expressing the typical kind of edgelordery, misanthropic perspectives. I mean, mixed in with plenty of very conventional kind of alt-right and rightist perspectives on the Facebook that is publicly available, and the other information that's been passed from people who've done research on him. So obviously there's intersections with the topic that we chose to talk about today, but maybe there's a degree to which it's opportunistic to make that comparison, but I think there's also a degree to which it's like completely fair and utterly in keeping with the things we want to say about ITS to talk about the facts of the matter with him.
It's hard to say to what extent he that he held those views versus they were just a nonsense hodgepodge.
Right.
I feel like I can't say definitively one way or the other. Because some of the rants that I've read have been fucked up, but coherent or towards some kind of general theme. Generally praising power and hating Jews, and that kind of thing. But then in particular the one where he calls himself a nihilist. He also says that he's sympathetic toward communism and Nazism because of the Semitic monotheist power structures or something. I don't know.
Well, common enemies is kind of what he's trying to get at there. He also reportedly, the folks who, I think Lamont Week and other folks who did reporting on his presence at white power rallies, apparently while he was Sig Heiling and stuff, he was I'm a nihilist. That's my politics. I'm a nihilist, repeatedly. And there's other instances of that. So, that's the reason why I bring it up in this context. I think we're all still kind of reeling, and there's not a lot of, there is other information that will be released soon about the stabbing and about that things that I don't know that I feel comfortable saying aloud right now. So we're kind of in a weird place about this kind of topic, but yeah, that's a thing that happened in a city that we all spent a lot of time in. I consider to be my home. Regardless of wherever I live at a given point. So that's kind of hanging over this episode. But is there anything else that folks want to talk about that?
I guess if you guys know of any, like, response from, like, the intersection of, like, the left and any, like, Muslim community or, like, solidarity situation going on, if there's anything to report about that.
Otherwise. Well, so, right. So, there's a vigil going on tonight. Sort of unsurprisingly. But interestingly, there is also the same people who put on the, like, they called it a free speech rally, but it is essentially like a white supremacist rally, out on 82nd a month ago, are putting on another one on June 6th.
4th, I think.
I believe. Right?
There's an Antifa rally on the 4th. I saw that.
Then, yeah, okay. Then that's the one that's a counter demonstration against the same, yeah, the same people who put on the last one, the one that this guy attended. And they're, like, distancing themselves from him, of course. But, like, not, of course, they're not owning the fact that, like, their rhetoric is what helped, right. What helped take on, this guy to do what he did. So there is, yeah, there is like a chance to fight them, whether that's physically or verbally.
There's also, I don't know. I'm going to be bringing a fruit basket to like a local mosque because, this shit is like so close to the neighborhood. That they're in and stuff like that. There's other things that people are doing that are more interpersonal or diffuse around here. It's not just the candlelight vigil or the counter protest.
It looks like Rose City Antifa doesn't have info about the rally on their website right now, but it is on their Facebook.
Oh, okay.
For more info.
Yeah, there's also some GoFundMe pages set up for the victims of the stabbing and the families of some of the victims. I don't have the information in front of me, but people could probably find that pretty easily.
And there's going to be more information about at least one of the people who survived the stabbing, at least one of the people involved in the stabbing, one of the people who survived. There'll be more information about that person specifically in a bit. But I don't know when we're going to get this episode out. I also don't know when people will. Release that information. So,
yeah. Do we want to talk about ITS now?
Yeah, let's talk about other murderous bastards.
Yeah. So I'm not like an expert on ITS or anything. So like, people should feel free to like chime in and stuff.
Oh, I thought you were just going to talk for 2 hours.
Yeah, I don't know. It seemed like I'm the one that's supposed to guide this episode. And I don't know. I'm not a leader.
Yes, you are. Well,
why don't you talk about the history of like what BTS is.
Yeah, if you could get it started, that would be awesome.
From my understanding, ITS was started as somewhat of a small-time, like, affinity group / like guerrilla group in Mexico, outside of Mexico City, a group of what originally were anarchists, ecological and nihilist bent, who decided to start taking actions, maybe initially revolutionary, towards their goals of ending civilization of, and this is where it's hazy for me. I don't actually recall if any of their actions were actually more of a positive vein in the past. It would have probably been the early 2000s when I started. But over the years they've definitely, gone down a path of eco-fascism, I would say, and have completely divorced themselves from the anarchist movement in Mexico and globally. and really kind of jumped off the deep end politically.
I think the first communiques were in 2011, at least explicitly as IDS.
Yeah, I think that they started around then.
Didn't they? Okay. I thought that they were, before ITS, they were something.
Well, they've changed names for Weld Reaction for a bit. And they might have done work as green anarchists, not identifying as ITS before that. I mean, probably they did. But I don't know that we can speak that confidently or clearly about that in this context.
Yeah, I'm trying to find it. There's an overview on the TASA of the history of ITS and their different formations and stuff. And I'm having trouble finding it in just a second.
Okay.
It's the one tab I didn't pull open when I was preparing for this. So sorry.
That's cool. We should find that because I'd rather hear that than my vague overview.
I'm sorry, but Sean, you being in the wilderness and making all these typewriter noises just seems like Ted Kaczynski. Plus, sorry, I can't
my computer
see
just like...
Which is one of the main influencers of ITF. For those who don't know.
Originally. They now repudiate. They reject Kaczynski now.
And
I wouldn't call Kaczynski anarchism, but
okay. Right. I would be charitable towards John on that, actually, myself, even though I strongly disagree with him. So ITS got started out of that realm, got started, by all accounts, out of the green anarchist broader milieu, however you want to define that, in Mexico, and or at least we assume mostly in Mexico. And people in Mexico City say that they are from the outskirts of Mexico City. And they have changed their perspective a little bit over the years. They have gone deeper into some of the more problematic kind of components. They, at least in recent history, do not identify as anarchists anymore. Not so recent. It's been a while. They identify as nihilists. They identify as individualists, but they take that in a really weird direction that I find super offensive and irritating. They got famous for murdering a bunch of people, and so they're anti-civ kind of nihilists is I think probably the best way to describe their perspective. They have murdered scientists. They bombed the children. They bombed children's hospitals a couple times. They put out a hit on an anarchist, but were unsuccessful, which pissed off most of the Mexico City anarchist scene. They recently took, they've been claiming a bunch of brutal murders, and it's unclear whether or not they did that or whether or not they're just claiming things done by, general criminals. But they recently claimed the murder of a woman, and their politics are extraordinarily reactionary, and they're backed by a number of so-called anarchist nihilist factions inside the United States and a few other places around the world, particularly the publishing house Little Black Heart has republished or has published a book called The TASA, and of course they make all the standard distancing about how they're just really interested in the ideas and whether or not you agree with the specific actions these people take. We're just interested in the discourse, but of course they'd never publish Maoists or fascists explicitly. One would hope. And so it's kind of absurd they're republishing this. And of course the defense that many anarchists in the United States, many people who are within the anarchist milieu, but now call themselves nihilists inside the United States give repeatedly when they make this kind of defense, talk about ITS is obviously I have my disagreements with them, but at least they're doing something. But I think the critical thing to be evaluated is whether the thing that they're doing has anything to do with anarchism, has anything to do with anarchy or any of the values or ideals that we hold. As of their most recent proclamations, ITS declares themselves anti-human, and their chief defender in the English language, Art or Abe Cabrera, is what he goes by online. He says that, you know, he proudly was like, oh yes, of course, I'm worse than Hitler. We're worse than Hitler. He proudly accedes to that fact. And ITS has called for the murder of millions of people, et cetera, you know, all of humanity, in kind of a twisted hostility towards humanism, which they blame for ecological crisis or whatever else. And also somehow, you know, we can get to the twists and tensions of identifying as nihilist, but also being involved in that kind of terror. Anyway, or that kind of like political ideology. Is that good? Does anybody else have anything to add?
I just think that Sean presses down way too hard on the keyboard.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's really loud.
I'm sorry. I'm not trying to.
Fucking lead thumbs over there. Sorry, being something real, I imagine.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, so the reason that we wanted to talk about this was because of the most recent claims that they've been making, yeah?
Yeah.
And, I mean, I think that there is speculation that they didn't actually do the things, that they're just claiming it. The things that I know of... So the things that I know of that they're claiming are that they killed a couple hiking in the woods, and so that they killed some woman near the university in Mexico City.
They set off a letter. Set a random letter bomb. They just like placed it at a random part in Mexico City, just on a bench, and a 16-year-old girl picked it up and it blew up, and like luckily it didn't injure her, but like they communicated, they were like basically like felt bad that it didn't kill her and stuff, and I don't know. It's pretty awful. Yeah.
Right. And I mean, their justifications are essentially non-existent. They're just saying that humans are a virus and need to be wiped out. There's not much else to it that I read.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really interesting to look at how their historical ideology got twisted towards this point. It's kind of a situation where, like, you know, you climb a ladder and then you knock the ladder out from beneath you, and then you just kind of like, oh yeah, make up some kind of random justification for the end point that you ended up reaching, ignoring all the steps that took you to get there. So obviously, like, if you're going to make like moral claims around the validity of, like, you know, or the problematicness of ecocide, the negative, you know, effect that gives you, whatever, any of those sorts of things that you're trying to argue, you know, to argue that there's things that you're opposed and things that you're for, or to try to like make those claims. Clearly those things came out of an analysis that, you know, came out of Kaczynski, came out of primitivism. And now they're kind of kicking a lot of that away. And for those of us who were intensely critical of those ideologies for a long time now, ITS is kind of like the reductio ad absurdum that we've always kind of, you know, said was lurking in the closet, or was likely to, that things were likely to arrive at. So I don't know. I think it might be interesting from kind of a philosophical direction to engage with the shitty arguments that they do make. Because they're obviously just kind of, you know, a quick apologia or flack. Engage more deeply with why they've emerged and what kind of like sustains them as an ideology, or what makes people even think that that's something that we can or should or would tolerate as anarchists.
So do you want me to like read some of the stuff Atossa has written, or some of the stuff posted on Atossa by ITS and the defenders, just to kind of like, I guess, give people a better idea of like exactly what we're dealing with, like how reactionary the rhetoric has gotten?
Yeah.
Is that cool?
Yeah, if you have some highlights. So
this is,
for sure.
This is an editorial posted on Atossa. I don't know who it was written by. This is their WordPress. It's like the English language propaganda wing of ITS.
So I guess. To be clear, there's a couple people, but specifically Art Cabrera, Abe Cabrera is this personality or this person connected with the nihilists in the Bay Area and LBC, who runs the Atossa weblog. He claims that he's not in contact with or associated with or in deep contact with or associated with the folks in ITS, that he's distinct from that. It's doing the standard kind of like spokesman versus like terrorist action cell kind of like distinction. That is a kind of important distinction to be made. So he's not speaking formally for ITS unless it's under ITS's name.
Yeah, okay. Well, here, I'm gonna read a little bits and pieces of the communique that claims response. Okay, so the group calling itself Individualists Heading Towards the Wild has taken responsibility for the murder of, and forgive me if I mispronounce her name, but it's Lesbi Berlin Osorio Martinez, a young woman found dead at the beginning of last week at the facilities of the National Autonomous University of Mexico. The group says the young woman received what she wanted, death. The murder of the woman at University City was a brutal and asphyxiating reaction that illustrates our disgust for modern human being. Maybe you think that a person stumbling around in the dawn hours high on drugs, chemicals that they took is worthy of keeping their life. We think not. That's why she received what she wanted, what she proudly desired, stated the extremist group. All members of ITS, they continue, completely repudiate the vices of modern human. We flat out reject the disgusting diversions. We hate those who, with little or a lot of money, live to alter their senses. These people are a waste of air. They are rubbish, human trash, whether they be women or men. They're the same virus that infects this beautiful earth. That is why they deserve extinction. It's fucking great. And this is an editorial that was posted on Atossa that kind of, I guess, editorializes it some more. It's how disgusting it is. It's kind of, this editorial is responding to sort of this murder sparked massive protests across Mexico amongst students and women, kind of to protest the, I guess, systemic violence against women.
And also the response to this particular murder, because I interestingly, or like tellingly, the I believe it was the administration at UNAM, but it could have been the chief of police, I can't remember exactly now, came out with a watered down version of what ITS is saying. When the murder happened, they were basically like, what do you expect if you're a woman walking around in the middle of the night on drugs, you know, maybe has like a no good boyfriend, like, of course, this person, like, lost her life. Like,
yeah,
sort of what you expect. And that was part of the catalyst for the huge backlash and the Cime Matan campaign, or whatever you call it, the protests and the discourse on all of the excuses that people have for femicide and how big of a problem it is in Mexico.
This editorial goes on. It says, how repugnant to see all those feminists protesting against a quote-unquote femicide in the middle of one of the cradles of progress that is the UC. They fill their fucking mouths with vicious speeches about equality and equity. We ask ourselves where they were when ITS killed a man, the chief of services of the chemistry department, in June last year. At the time, no one protested. All you kept your mouth shut like cowards that you are. How's that for equality? Your speeches reek like a drunk man's vomit after he ate out the pussy of a syphilitic whore. You stink, and even more disgusting is there irresistible urge to play the victim. Don't you realize that this is taking the stance that you're playing right in the hand of the system? Young people these days who have the urge to be quote unquote special snowflakes and solve the social problems of the society are hopeless. They go on about the same shit that young people 45 years ago went on about, blah, blah, blah. So, like, I mean, one of the arguments that people like Aragorn and, you know, on the Brilliant podcast, one of the arguments that they make to try to distance themselves from ITS is like, oh, you know, we're not for their actions or against their actions. We just want to, like, you know, we just think this is really important discourse, you know? And my question is, like, how is this important discourse? Like, how is this something that we want to give a platform to? Like, this doesn't seem to be furthering any sort of discourse that I think is in any interest of anarchists at all. So I don't know.
Right. I think it's important to, despite that kind of distancing that they're trying to do, I mean, you repeatedly hear at least they're doing something, or, like, you know, claims that the values that ITS espouses or the goals or the aspirations that it have in some way line up with their own is something, and should line up with, like, what anarchism is for them. Is something that you repeatedly hear from a kind of nihilist anti-civ crowd, especially LBC kind of folks. So I think it's important to place eco-extremism, which is like the formal ideology that has, or the name that's been cast around what ITS is currently advocating. I think it's important to, like, place it as merely one peak of a larger kind of, like, iceberg that's cresting. There was a kind of a small nihilist anti-civ milieu, but I think one can speak pretty plainly about them. They continue to, you know, differentiate themselves from anarchists in really clear ways, but they refuse to, I think, make that fully explicit, and as a consequence are trying to, like, disingenuously pull in a fraction of anarchists with them on the terrible journey that they're going. And I think the thing I want to get out kind of at the start that annoys the shit out of me about this whole thing is that there's this real push with LBC and with those kinds of things to kind of, like, steal individualist anarchism or post-structural anarchism and, like, determine what those terms mean and take them in pretty much, like, the most horrific, like, reductio ad absurdum in absurd straw man kind of directions that they were like, oh yeah, that's totally what we want. They want to mutate the political or ethical individualism that's always been part of anarchism and then strip away, like, altruism, empathy, love, and just kind of turn it into a sociopathy, like an interpersonal capitalism kind of thing, like fucking one another over, struggling for the top, for one's happenstance desires in the moment. I think that ITS needs to be understood as a very clear kind of, like, apex of this, and or one direction in which this can crest. The eco-extremists argue, or they take this kind of in the direction of, like, a fetishization of warrior culture that's strongly reminiscent of, basically early fascism. You know, it's ideological sociopathy in the direction of being, like, social capitalist, struggling for, or that's another direction that things can go, is, like, the social capitalist direction. So there's, like, two kind of crests. Like, one is kind of like the, you know, hoo-ah, like, grow, kind of like, make total destroy minus any sort of ethics. And that's basically what early fascist street fighting fascism was. And then the second kind of direction that a lot of leftism in this vein goes, or in the broader anti-civ milieu goes, is kind of more in the direction of social capitalism, kind of struggling for social cred, standing, positioning, etc., in a very kind of bold, open-faced kind of way. And those are two kind of separate things. Like ITS is in the direction of, you know, like, a violent kind of emotional affect of an individual experience of violence, and a lot of the kind of swarmy social capitalist, social climbers of like Aragorn's crew are like more in a different direction. But I think the thing that's common between both of those is kind of the stripping away of any sort of like ethics or empathy or like focus upon love within Aragism. They explicitly embrace immorality and amorality, depending on whichever of those terms in different situations. And I think that leads to kind of both of those directions or opens the door to them. Also, you find an ITS and an eco-extremist and kind of an abstract worship of wildness or nature that is like never cleanly defined. So it's just this like really weird jumble of associations that like they reach through some personal sequence of growth. But they're never rigorous about defining what exactly it is. So it's left to us or like other anti-civ writers to fill in the gaps. So, you know, it's the standard association of like concrete and gray things with corners are bad. Green growing things are good. Humans are with the gray, therefore they're the bad. Kind of like, it's a really weird, like it philosophically makes no kind of sense. It's just this weird jumble of things. Tech, cities, reason, science, they're all kind of cast in together instead of like Carroll analyses. But, you know, even a lot of the traditional like primitivist analyses of those things still held on to some kind of, some notion of ethics. And ITS is now casting even that aside. So even that kind of foundation isn't there. Now it's just like everything, you know, like they, it's kind of like an edgelordery of like, I reject everything, fuck everything, everything is terrible. Except maybe like wolves killing a deer in a forest. That's super badass. That's cool. That's what I want to be associated with. So.
I wonder if any of you have read more, you know, like extensively their recent writings or at any point, like how they, I'm interested in things like how they define or like consider like things like nature and like do they have actual philosophical positions on any of these things, how do they support their misanthropy? What I've read is not very coherent. It's kind of just like little just like spurted out rhetoric that's really hard to get through, which is probably why I haven't.
Right, so I've read all of the ITS communiques, and I've read most of the other things that have been attributed to eco-extremism in various forms. They are not philosophically rigorous, to say the fucking least. I mean, they're kind of infamous for some of their initial things in like 2011, ITS was like, nanotechnology is this great evil, and that's why we need to bomb like, you know, students at colleges that are researching how to, you know, build nanotechnology. Because nanotechnology is going to be gray goo and blah, blah, blah. And they had like a really terrible analysis and they didn't really understand what they were talking about. And so after they started killing some scientists, the scientists kind of like tamely were like, well, we have a critique of what you wrote because it's completely wrong. And ITS's response hilariously and famously was basically like, well, we don't care that we were wrong about the particulars. Only eggheads would like, you know, like, even if like the particulars and the actual conclusions are completely wrong that we reach, it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, we still know that you're like scientists and humanists and part of the Enlightenment and modernists and all of that needs to die. And so you're not going to trick us with any of your like reasoning and facts and details and coherency. It's a pretty absurd. I feel like it's worth pulling up the actual communique because the actual language they used was, well, not quite that, but it was still pretty extreme. It just bit the bullet on not knowing it, but there is a fellow named John Jacobi, who's like a kid in, I think, North Carolina. And he's like a very kind of tech analytic philosophy kind of oriented person. So he tries to be a little bit more rigorous about this kind of thing. And he has also been occupying the eco-extremist like kind of ideological space, although he's been trying to take it in, like a pro-science direction. I've had really long exchanges with him. Things were going to be published publicly at some point. And he's kind of like backed out of that because he just can't respond to certain arguments that they made. But John's position or Jacobi's position is an attempt to get more rigorous about what is meant by wildness, by nature, as opposed to like human or artifice. And, part of the reason why he doesn't have a fucking response to me or any of the other people who critique him really is that that's an absurd kind of, distinction that it's really hard to back up. If you were to like steel man the shit out of this argument, it's kind of like metacognition itself, or, you know, thinking about thinking, or symbolic thought, culture, the kind of like more abstract meta processes that humans are involved in. Those things are bad because they move faster. And this is Jacobi, because Jacobi is trying to make like a more rigorous argument than ITS, because they don't give a shit about rigor or anything, or actual argumentation. So Jacobi's argument is more that, like, you know, our thinking exceeds our grasps. So we, you know, the complexities of our thought, they spin out of control. And we will come up with, we will be able to make leaps ahead of what evolutionary pressures are able to accomplish. So a pretty standard, like, alt-right argument that, like, cultural evolution proceeds at a certain pace, and that people who try to make revolutionary or radical jumps forward in terms of, or in any direction, if you don't believe in some sort of objective forward progress, if you try to make jumps that are too rapid, or that involve too many complex calculations, you're going to get those calculations wrong, because reality is more complicated than that. And so you will destroy your society. You will destroy, everything will go wrong as a, or, you know, the world or whatever you value will go terribly wrong, if you don't do things on like a generational really slow basis. This is the reason why, this is the explicit argument of the neo-reactionaries, who argue that we need to get back to, that we need to get back to the societies that work for thousands of years, i.e. patriarchy or whatever. And also the argument behind something is like getting back to hunter-gatherer or whatever shit. I'm talking a lot, but I think I should also briefly note in passing that ITS, because they're more like Kaczynski oriented, they totally bite the bullet on hunter-gatherer or pre-civ societies being actually really horrible. They're like, yeah, they were right in the tooth and claw, and like lots of people died from brutal deaths like all the fucking time. It isn't that great, because life is actually kind of terrible, and or humans are kind of terrible, and like the only real freedom or the real wildness is like, you know, taking a club to your neighbor's skull. Anyway, so they're explicit about that. I think that's important to know.
I sort of get the impression that they no longer really care very much about that rhetoric, though. I mean, obviously they're still to some degree supporting that idea, but they seem to have moved away from caring so much about primitivism or the wild, and now it's more like just humans are a plague and they need to be eradicated. No real, I mean, we can infer that they're doing it in some sort of continuation of their beliefs about wildness or nature or whatever, but the claims that they're making about killing the couple and this girl and leaving that letter bomb random people to find seems to be that you know, they no longer have any interest in rhetoric really at all, or justifications. And they've just sort of like stepped entirely into the, like, you know, humans are the primary evil. And, you know,
well, I think they still have interest in like emotional justifications. I think that they've lost interest in trying to make like rational justifications. I mean, rather explicitly, they're opposed to reason and to rationality.
Sure.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, I think, yeah, go ahead.
Emotional justifications on what level? I guess I'm curious where you see
so
that.
So finding ways to have emotional affect that resonates with people. I mean, they wouldn't be writing communiques. They'd just be, if you really wanted to like murder people and be efficient at it and just like, you know, whatever, you'd go out with your machete and just like kill random people and not brag about it. You wouldn't feel the fucking need to go out and like write fucking communiques. And even if you're using it on tour or whatever, and you have all the good security, for your fucking, your ability to transmit those communiques, just even making the communique puts you at more risk and like imperils your capacity to murder more people. So like the very fact that they like feel obligated to make these communiques and to like do their posturing and do their bragging or whatever, and also have all this, like, you know, fluffy, you know, poetic rhetoric about shit, that I think shows that they're trying to like rebuffer their own kind of like commitment to the terrible clusterfuck they've gotten themselves into, right? Like, if you are some like green anarchist, like whatever punk like 10 years ago, and you get like partially radicalized by anarchism, like a really limited way, where somebody like gives you like, you know, like a couple pieces of anarchism, says like, you know, oh, did you know that the state is oppressive? Did you know that like ecocide is happening right now? Did you know like a couple of these things? Also, hey, these are things that are like bad to you and you personally kind of thing. And then, you know, they never get any of the actual substantive component of like, you know, abolishing power relations kind of component of anarchism, and how that like innately means like empathy and engagement with other people or whatever. And that doesn't have to mean like not being antisocial, or like individualistic. It can just fucking mean just being altruistic, right? While still being a stubborn, bitter individualist. But anyway, so, you know, their anarchism gets cheapened from liberate everyone to attack everything, make the world destroy. It becomes bumper sticker kind of anarchism. And, you know, neither ruler nor ruled never sets in or gels with them. And they continue trucking along, and they have the kind of like rhetorical ratchet effect where they're feedbacking on one another and being like, oh yeah, I'm more radical than you. Like, you know, oh yeah, I reject this as well. I'm totally, you know, it's the thing that binds them doesn't become like a caring about people or a caring about minds or anything. It becomes like an emotional state that is being fetishized and is being worshipped as like the common point of solidarity between them, you know, the individual and their friends or whatever in that situation. Like, you know, we all bond over thinking that everybody sucks. And, you know, the world is a terrible place and fuck everyone. And they just kind of like find new ways to state that to one another and new ways to state that to themselves. And then at some point they encounter real anarchists and are like, holy shit, well, we're nothing like you. Fuck you guys. And they go even further to differentiate themselves. And the ratcheting effect just runs out of control. Like it's not. And once you've murdered people, like you're not going to like pack that up and go home to like a very conventional life.
Okay.
You know, if you've got that whole thing spiraling.
One of the points that we're not, well, okay. One of the things that I feel about what I'm reading from them is not demonstrative of trying to communicate this emotional collaboration, but rather speaking closer to the modern sort of like edgy, hate everything, descent into madness vibes that I get from, you know, a lot of the internet, really. And it seems like a pretty popular thing. Obviously, I think that like most people want to have some sort of emotional validation for their actions, and that they probably do too, but I don't know that claiming these murders isn't just for shock value. I mean, it seems very like G.G. Allen, you know?
Yeah.
It's not really, you know, they're not coming out and saying we need to do this because, you know, it's good for anything, really. They're just saying humans are bad. They're filth. I don't know. I don't see the emotional appeal in that.
Well, I mean, because you're a decent human being, right? But if the emotional appeal is, there is something to be said to like the emotional affect of like raw conflict and adrenaline and sociopathic kind of domination of other people. Like that is addictive, like empirically. People like that shit. They enjoy the feeling of sadism. They enjoy the feeling, like certain people or certain directions, people can get locked into it. There is a kind of emotional positive reaction that people, or positive affect that people build with that kind of thing. And I think that like, if that is for some people, their notion of what liberty is or what like freedom is. And I think it's interesting that they use the term wild instead of freedom, which I kind of want to thank them for, because, you know, obviously, what they're advocating is like this, you know, this this fight of everyone against everyone else, or this kind of, you know, don't care about people or don't care about people that you don't know, like horrible nihilism, is obviously not coherent or reconcilable with anarchism. Is obviously not a freedom. Like, that's obviously not freedom. That's obviously not liberation. But they still, I think, for a lot of people, what freedom or liberty means to them is something kind of like that kind of release from the self-constraint that dominates the most today. Because most people, you know, are not motivated by empathy or compassion for other people. Most people don't do good or don't, like, avoid murdering other people because they, like, actually give a shit. Most people in this world do that because they are, in some sense, like, actually indoctrinated with, like, a cop in their head that just tells them not to for some arbitrary reason. Or because they're, like, afraid of ramifications for that. They're afraid that somebody will come down on them if they do, like, just slit someone's throats on the bus. And so there's a lot of people who feel, you know, they anarchy means no rules, man.
I just want to, for the record, state that I don't agree with that perspective on humanity. Just so that you don't steamroll it all into a group opinion on that.
No, it's good. I'm sure there's plenty of lots of shit to be in disagree on. I have a very dark perspective of humans in general, which is also one of the reasons why I'm an anarchist, right? Which is not to say that I hate humans. I think that humanity is pretty terrible on the whole, is pretty sociopathic on the whole. Most people are not motivated by compassion for one another. Most people, the reason why this whole, like, nihilist thing, I think, has, like, really caught on with a lot of people, why people, like, somehow, ITS argues that, like, their justification for bombing a children's hospital, or children's hospital charity, and then a children's hospital, was that, you know, they wanted to prove to the world that they are not enslaved by by morality, by ethics, which is, you know, only something inside of their mind that could, like, occur through, like, indoctrination, through ideological indoctrination. There's no reason anyone would care about somebody that you don't personally know, you're not personally connected to, unless that was, like, a brainwashing process, right? And a lot of people read that kind of shit and are like, yeah, it makes sense to me. That follows my personal perspective on shit. That might follows my experience. So we can argue over what percentage of humanity, what percentage of people that is in general, or have that kind of perspective on things, or to what degree they share that perspective. I have a negative view on that, but I don't think that we can argue, or I don't think that it's I think it's pretty objective that there are at least some people who have that perspective, which is what I was trying to say around the emotional kind of affect that people have around the notion of wildness or liberation.
Yeah, so the scum fucks of the world are emotionally bound to this ITS cry for attention through shock value. All right.
Yeah.
I agree with that, yeah. On that level. But I mean, I also think that, like, it has been called into question whether or not they actually have done the things that they're claiming. And,
sure.
You know, I think that it's relevant to point out, at least to me, when I first read it, I thought I was certain that they were lying, not necessarily about having done it, but about the reasoning behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it just doesn't add up. So I think that, you know, like, the communiques, in some way or another, seem to be lies. Whether they did it and their reasons were secret and they're not actually telling us the reasons, or they didn't do it and they're just claiming somebody else's, you know, horrible acts, I don't really know. But I certainly don't think that they are being honest about their motivations and the actions that they're taking.
I disagree with that. I do think that, I mean, it's totally open as to whether or not they did certain things. There's people that have talked from Mexico City about some of the actions that they've done, and because people really hate them. Like, the anarchist scene down there, from all accounts, like, sure. Really,
I'm not saying they've done nothing.
Right.
I'm saying these recent murders, I guess.
These recent murders, who knows? But I do think that they actually, like, think the shit that they're saying. Like, because I encounter these arguments from people quite sincerely. Like, the things that ITS argues that LBC, whatever, the anti-Civ Nihilist folks in general are like, well, you know, you can disagree with their actions, but obviously their ideas are pretty valid and like at the mainstream of anarchism, and we should be having this discourse kind of thing. Those people, there's plenty of people who argue for that shit like all the fucking time. Like I encounter plenty of anti-Civ Nihilists of various stripes who argue for almost literally every point by point that that is made in the TASA or that is made in the ITS communiques. Maybe it's worth rolling through those specifically, like, you know, that there's such a thing as wildness or nature and that humans are in conflict with that, which obviously is not fucking true. It's a weird, stupid bundle of associations. That indigenous perspectives are equally as valid as science, which is like a big thing that a bunch of the anti-Civ Nihilist folks have tried to flee in the direction of more recently, which is obviously just fucking liberal, like, you know, pluralism, moralizing against the privileging any perspective over another perspective, and it's ridiculous that they're using that to their own perspective or to their own self-justification. But I know plenty of people who make that argument quite sincerely.
But I want to point out that I'm not saying that I don't necessarily think that they believe the things that they're saying. What I'm arguing here is that I think that they can believe it. Like, I've met plenty of people that are misanthropes, at least according to their rhetoric.
Right.
But I don't think that they are actually acting on those claims in the way that they are claiming, if that makes sense. What doesn't make sense to me is that if they actually just hate humanity and want to kill everybody, that they're targeting a couple of random people.
Right.
It's quantitatively, it doesn't make sense to me, right? Like, you know, I don't want to give them any ideas, so I'm not going to list the things that they could be doing, but like these random few killings doesn't add up to I hate humanity. And right. That's sort of the big thing that leads me to say, like, maybe they believe these things that they're saying. I'm not going to call that in question. I don't know the individuals, so whatever. But, like, I think that their communications are lies in some respect. It just doesn't add up.
Well, never underestimate how just fucking stupid they could be, right? Sure, like, there's a lot of things they could do if they wanted to kill, like, I think they mentioned like 200 million people in your local bioregion is something that they like supported murdering, right? Like if they wanted to do that, they could like find ways to attack nuclear power plants. They could find ways to do different things, right? To spread pollution, to do other sorts of like, you know, to have catastrophic effects upon people's survival or livelihood. But let's not underestimate the fact that like it's really easy to stab a girl who's high on drugs, right? And it's really fucking hard, or it's a little bit fucking harder to like actually strike infrastructure and actually murder like hundreds of millions of people. So they're sociopaths doesn't fucking mean that they're not like complete idiots, right? You know?
Yeah. And, I mean, they might be idiots, but it, you know, I think hundreds of millions and one is a large range, right? Like,
I get the impression from a lot of their writings and stuff that they're, at least they state that they're not trying to like bring about any sort of social change. Like they don't really have any goals. They just view themselves, their actions as like a visceral reaction to civilization. It's just like this, like, it's not like a strategic endeavor. It's just a visceral reaction. It's not, they don't have any goals. Their goal isn't to bring down the civilization. Their goal isn't to create any sort of like social revolution. In fact, they explicitly reject that. It's just about like, I'm just reacting to the situation around me, and there's no strategy behind it.
Right. I think that's a really good point. Like they really explicitly make clear the emotional immediatism that they conceive of as like the core of their ideology.
It's like, what strikes more fear, a strategic attack that you can conceptualize and find ways to bottleneck, or just like random out, like lashing out? Like, I think that has this effect of like, you don't know who's going to be next, and you don't know why, and you don't know where, but like, this group is going to keep randomly assaulting and killing people. And that's like a chilling idea, I think, for a lot of people.
Suppose, although the, from what I recall, the attack on the couple was an attack of opportunity based on them waiting for people to be illegally logging or something like that. So they were trying to put into effect some sort of tactic or strategy. At least according to that claim.
Yeah, well, you know, it's true that I don't know how much coherence we can really expect from people who's like are explicitly opposed to coherence, right? So,
sure. I mean, obviously they're incoherent. So, you know, maybe it, yeah, that's just something about it doesn't seem to ring true to me. And, you know, I think that for that reason, I think that it makes sense to me that people are like, I don't necessarily think that they did these things. It didn't seem, but I mean, maybe they did. Obviously, we can't know.
Mm-hmm. It's one of those things, I think you sort of touched on it a little bit, Will, but like to me, that just keeps screaming out is this like wariness of like long term, like essentially small scale, like guerrilla warfare that like people who stay in these insular groups like live in an echo chamber and then can convince themselves about just about anything. Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting thing, at least to me, to think about, because in other ways I see that kind of, like strategy as being like pretty effective, you know, in some of the other iterations that you see of it, like, you know, here or like revolutionary struggle, is a kind of a you know, maybe has tactical similarity, but a really like different look at affinity group action, or you know, the PKK. But yeah, that this strategy in the long term often seems to end up with people being really far removed from the movements that they started out being supported by, and then like either, you know, crumbling in on themselves or just like losing all coherence. And that's part of what I am sensing here. You know, we know that these people started out as anarchists, but now we're looking down 10 years of this kind of, you know, lifestyle and tactic of.
Well, I don't know if they started out as anarchists, right? Well, like, I mean,
I think they may have
self-identified as anarchists at some point. I'm not sure I'm willing to concede the fact that they were ever anarchists to begin with. Kind of more of the point that I'm trying to make.
Nobody's an anarchist.
Yeah, sure, whatever.
That's
if
true.
We're going to talk about who I actually think is an anarchist versus who's self-identifying, like that's going to be a really
well, sure.
Sad
but that'll be the next show. There are still
outer peripheral kind of things that we can clearly exclude, right? Like national anarchists, not anarchists, right? Like everyone should be pretty like on the same page with that. One of the interesting things about ITS that we haven't brought up yet is actually that, and they, I think, made this clear themselves, that they actually have a lot of affinity with national anarchists, and their explicit ideology is like basically one of national anarchism. Nationalism in the sense of like tribal, but you know, a return to you know, national, only caring about people that you know or that like are connected to you or that like you know you share that whatever with in like some immediate sense, and not caring about people beyond that like in group is very core to what ITS has argued before in the past, and that's like the fundamental precept of national anarchism. So I mean, like the fact that they're using alt-right language and that kind of thing, like I think that there is something to be said for the fact that they don't fall under the definition of anarchist for like, insofar as we are to have any sort of umbrella or for definition of anarchism that makes any sort of coherent sense whatsoever, has any sort of boundaries. If it's strong enough to kick out national anarchist, which I think obviously any definition of anarchism has to be, I think it would also kick out ITS, even back when they were calling themselves anarchists.
Perhaps, yeah. I can't really recall their first action, so I'm going based off of what I recall as like a self-identity, and without an ideology that was like super strongly professed, I just sort of accepted it. But yeah.
Yeah, I believe in I believe in one of their earlier communiques, they explicitly or pretty explicitly identified as with anarcho-primitivism, but they've since repudiated that pretty strongly.
Yeah.
So, Kara was bringing up an interesting point when you were talking about people who go off and do this kind of like cell-based struggle or insurrectionary struggle or revolutionary struggle or whatever off on their own. And I think there's a really valid point in there about when you get distanced from the movement that you originally supported or that originally supported you and what that leads into. But I think there's also an interesting point there going back to kind of what ITS says themselves and what defenders of ITS bring up all the time, which is they say like, oh, you know, obviously they try to make the sleight of hand where they pretend as though ITS's values are like remotely pale in anarchist circles and that not something that we shouldn't just like absolutely condemn and isn't like the absolute opposite of anarchism. But they also claim that like, oh, well, you know, if you want a revolution, then you necessarily support the murder of people in collateral damage, of like people who's, you know, are being picked up by an ambulance and that ambulance doesn't manage to make it to the hospital, or like you shoot a politician, but like that politician, et cetera. That there's always going to be collateral damage inside of a revolution, and that the only consistent position you could have. And Aragorn and folks on The Brilliant make this argument too, like somehow without like dying from shame of making this argument, they claim like if you're a pacifist, then you can critique ITS, but if you're not a pacifist, if you don't go to full-on pacifism, then you're basically the same thing as ITS. They're just being more coherent about it or more open about it. And I think that's absolutely absurd, but I think it's a point that comes up repeatedly in this conversation.
I mean, I suppose if your aim is to destroy humanity or just harm people because you hate humanity, then I don't know why you would be a pacifist and hold that belief, but... Seems pretty absurd to me to say that you, as a militant, are by default as bad as ITS if your aims are wildly different.
Right. I think the values are like a really important component that we're risking, or that like they always try to obscure away in a very underhanded kind of way, or the defenders of ITS do. But I think also there's this kind of like very kind of mainstream shallow analysis of ethics in the nihilist circles or nihilist discourse right now. Anarcho-nihilisty, whatever shit, is obviously most nihilist and identifies anarchists or remotely involved in the anarchist movement. But it's this kind of notion where like it reduces what ethics and morality are supposed to be talking about down to like these absolute straw men and caricatures. And so like, you know, okay, well, we reject that, therefore we reject anything that might look like ethics or morality in some abstract sense because they're exactly the same thing.
Right.
Specifically, they will like often say that, you know, that they're just like some, they essentially characterize them as like deontology, right? As ethics and morality is like strict rules about or conditions about like the actions that you take. And they don't place them in terms of like goals or desires, which would be like a consequentialist ethics. So for them, like ethics and morality can only, yeah, obviously I'm pro consequentialism, but the point is that like, you know, even consequentialism and deontology are not the only contenders in in what ethics is and what people, even common people, use ethics to mean.
I just want to say something quick, which is that I think that it's more the nihilists who claim that like we should move away from ethics. Like, I think it's a pretty popular belief among anarchists that like rationality isn't useful to us or is patriarchal or is wrong or whatever. And we, you know, most people get past that point, but it is something that I hear a lot. And I feel like this is a really good cautionary tale of, like, what's the possible worst that could happen if you actually think that there's no, like, that we should move away from rationality. I kind of want to be like, well, ITS is kind of...
Well, I also think that, those critiques of ethics, yeah, I think they're really common in radical discourse these days. But they really, I feel like, became common post-2008 when LBC started, like, pushing their books out really heavily and started pushing their line and trying to normalize it in anarchist circles. Like, there's lots of people who now, I guess, been around for almost 10 years who consider, like, to be, like, a mainstream thing and ITS to be, like, a mainstream thing and just, like, at the core of anarchism, and that, like, who would possibly have a problem with those kinds of things. And I think that normalization, like, ratcheting effect that we've seen over the last, like, decade, I guess. Oh, God, I can't believe it's a decade. Because to me, I haven't really, like, I've just kind of, like, dismissively, like, talk shit on it out of hand, because the idea of treating it seriously is just so absurd. Because I don't, there were always, like, the feminist critiques of rationality. Rationality is patriarchal or whatever. And, like, the shitty continental philosophy, postmodernist shit has always kind of been around. But I feel like the severity at which those perspectives are now leveraged in radical discourses, radical spaces, is like a relatively new thing.
I would like to juxtapose, though, while I'm a strong believer in ethics, I also think that even if I wasn't a strong believer in ethics, I could still have practical aims that are self-serving, that don't involve the murder of all humanity.
Sure.
You know, like,
yeah,
I don't want to live in a world where humanity is murdered every day. You know, that doesn't sound even aesthetically appealing, you know.
Uh-huh.
Like, and I guess, you know, some people make an argument that aesthetics and ethics are marriable, so maybe that's an ethic, I don't know, but it just doesn't sound appealing to me, I guess. And I think that there are a lot of people that can have practical goals that, you know, aren't working within an ethical framework necessarily, or that they admit and don't aspire towards just wanton tragedy.
Sure, there's a real big difference between, like, worse than Hitler and just, like, average generic, like, a political, unethical, like, random, like, egoist dude.
Yeah.
But there's, like, this weird moralism that is, like, a theme of, especially a lot of their more recent ITS communiques, of, like, you know, everyone is guilty of ecocide and everyone is culpable. And, like, I don't know, a lot of, especially, you know, like, the anti-drug rhetoric and stuff. I mean, it just reminds me of old, like, straight edge, like, hardline, fucking, like, hardcore lyrics or something. This reminds me of, like, Earth Crisis lyrics or something. Like, just this hyper moralism, but it's also this weird, like, oh, we're anti-rational, we don't care about ethics or morals, but then there's, like, this weird moralism to it all. I don't know. It's really confusing to me.
Right, because if they were rational, they would realize the contradiction and spouting moralities that they also don't believe in.
Yeah,
you fucking egghead for bringing it up. Like, actually, you're in. That's one of the weird things, is that, like, I mean, it's not that weird that ITS and their reactionary politics are now basically, like, copying the language of the alt-right or of neo-reactionaries, right? And one of the interesting things was watching the neo-reactionary movement, which originally, early on, had, like, some ties to the transhumanist movement, then, like, diverge really hostily around 2012, when they realized that, like, oh, technology could liberate, like, queers and could, like, let people live in sort of weird ways that we don't want them to live. All right, well, then we need to collapse this civilization. Because it was interesting, some of these, like, early neo-Nazi alt-right folks, like, before the Trump era kind of thing, like, found that I was a thing, and so they sent me death threats for, like, a week. And one weekend in particular was particularly strong of it. And what was interesting is, like, a lot of their threats were, like, argued from a very, like, almost explicitly, like, very ITS kind of perspective. Like, they were like, know, civilization will collapse and the real alpha men will rule as warriors and you cucks will be driven. I mean, they weren't using cucks back at this point, but, you know, the same sort of analysis will be driven before us as we steal your women and whatever. And like murder, which is the only real, et cetera. Like, it was a bunch of like utter ridiculous edgelord bullshit. But what was really fascinating, you know, I'd go back and I'd do some research on the people who were threatening my life and find like their social media profiles or whatever. And a lot of them had like survivalist, but also like primitivist things that they were like repeating. And I mean, we should probably do like a whole episode upon like the intersections and tensions and conflicts and things about that, those kinds of concepts. And the, you know, the various creep and resistance and whatever within those spaces. But it is fascinating to me that like ITS is like just outright saying, like outright repeating alt-right terminology now.
I guess it's not that surprising, but
yeah.
Once they were kneecapping scientists, I just like, I couldn't see any way to go but right.
I mean, if anything, I think that they are trying to appeal to, you know, the shock value that is popular, has been popular in 4chan and whatnot. And, you know, 4chan is a big, I don't know if it's like the biggest on the internet, but it's one of the biggest breeding grounds of alt-right nonsense. And I think that, like, you know, if you've already gone this far and you really want to appeal to, you know, anybody, then your best bet is to appeal to people that don't give a shit about anything. Mm-hmm. And that would be that 4chan shock value crowd.
I mean, I would be surprised if ITS visits 4chan or is like directly connected to it, but I definitely agree that there's like a broader milieu of people that have that kind of politic or that kind of stance on life or like perspective, and that they're maybe finding greater affinity with those people than otherwise. I mean, you see this a lot in ANews comment section sort of shit where people, it becomes more and more common where like people are just outright saying on anarchistnews.org that like that the alt-right is the cool, like, modern rebels, right? That the alt-right is the new punk rock. And they'll openly say this, like, not mockingly, but like admiringly in like the comment sections there, which is kind of horrific. I mean, whatever your critiques of social justice, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, right.
I miss the old A News.
Yeah, I like somehow becoming like just some like completely nihilistic right wing buffoonery. Like, I miss the transition, and I understand that anarchists have largely abandoned it, except for a few folks who talk in this podcast. I don't think any other anarchists ever look at it, but. It's really, and I like hearing you guys tell me about it because I like don't go there anymore. I don't. It's kind of hard to imagine. It's like we lost Portland Indie Media to the 9/11 truthers, and then the Anarchist News becomes eco-fascist. I'm just like, what's up? Well, what's up next?
Just porn. That's all the internet has now.
I mean, I would be much happier if it was just porn and not actually alt-right trolls.
Okay. Agreed.
Yeah. I've talked a lot in this, but there is another thing that I really is important to me about this whole thing, which is I really hate the fact that folks have been kind of successful in repolarizing or redetermining what people think of as post-left or individualist anarchism. And the ways in which a lot of the valid critiques or the things that I think are valid, obviously people on this podcast will disagree with me on different things, have been seized or appropriated by like shitty anti-sub nihilist kind of shitbags. And and the way that they claim those things as though they're the only representatives of those sort of critiques, or the only path you can go down if you have those critiques. I think that there's kind of like this like real Mott and Bailey fallacy. Do folks know what the Mott and Bailey fallacy is? Should I go over that? It's the idea that like you have like an argument that's really easily defendable, but you also have like a broader argument that you actually want to defend. So you say a bunch of things that like essentially argue the actual argument that you want to defend, but you give yourself like slippery wiggle room on it so that when somebody attacks you on that, you retreat back to the inner argument that you really want to defend. Or to the argument that you don't want to defend, but is really easily defendable. One example would be like culture shapes our experiences. That is a perfectly valid argument. Hardly anyone would be able to really argue against that. But people can use that to kind of transmute it into cultural knowledge is just as valid as scientific knowledge and can eclipse scientific knowledge or overrule scientific knowledge. You behave and argue as though the less defendable belief is true, but you only really have to explicitly defend the more defendable, less extreme belief. So, like, I have criticisms of Israel serves as a shield for actually being anti-Semitic. I think that it's important to...
The Bailey fallacy perfectly describes post-left identity.
I think that it's at play a lot in the ways that a lot of the post-left or a lot of the nihilist crew have appropriated kind of arguments or stolen them for themselves. So this comes into play in the way that ITS, I think, functions in their own ideology. So like you have this valid critique of nationalism and that it values those as being in the in-group over the out-group. That's a valid critique of nationalism. That's totally bad. But then somehow like this and we recognize this as a bad thing, but then somehow this like gets detached from this actual justifications. And gets swirled around, and suddenly nationalism is a bad thing, gets continued, but then people flip the script and say that like anti-nationalism means only caring about your tribe, because nationalism is the thing that's wrong with nationalism is about caring about too large of a tribe. And then you poke them really hard on it, and then what they flip around to is like arguments about like why war is bad and why like not caring about people you don't know are bad, but then they flip right back to the argument they're actually trying to defend, which is ultimately a form of nationalism, a kind of tribal nationalism. And so that's, I think, very explicitly like what happens with national anarchists, but also with like ITS's defense of the same sort of thing. Like indigenous nationalism oftentimes gets brought up inside of like two different things. Like they'll say like, oh, well, by indigenous nationalism, we just mean blah, blah, blah. But then like 5 seconds later, you get like this guy, like Vince Reinhardt, I think, who is like a national anarchist, but like, you know, is also a Native American. And he uses that to defend all kinds of horrific things because like patriarchy is just part of my culture and then you need to accede to that or whatever. And so so I feel like that's kind of the same direction that the broader defense of ITS that's been made by LBC or by folks in that kind of like anti-civ nihilist milieu have been making. I think that the critique of organizationalism and a focus on individual agency, rather than like subsuming us and oversimplifying spooks or abstractions that are disconnected or not rooted, I agree that's like a totally valid critique. But then 5 seconds later, this slides into like, and so therefore, like, don't care about anyone besides like maybe your immediate friends or, you know, have any sort of concrete rooted like scientific analysis, or whatever, because those things are spooks too, and like that. You know, that argument is much harder to make, and they can't actually make that argument if you press them on it. But they use the kind of Mott and Bailey thing to slide back and forth from that and to claim that therefore, you know, post-leftism means being hostile to science, to humanity, etc. Obviously, humanity can be a problematic, notion, right? You know, there's the inside of humanity, the other side of humanity. What is a dolphin a thinking sentient being that we should care about? Obviously, somebody who is a cyborg or something else like that, they may no longer qualify as a formal human, but you know, I think we should still care about them because they're mind. So obviously there are deep critiques and reasonable critiques to be made of humanism. And in fact, a lot of really valid critiques ultimately boil down to humanism is just another form of nationalism. But then like, what is the critique of nationalism? is the critique of nationalism caring about people. The critique of humanism that I find valid is like that it doesn't go far enough in terms of like recognizing, you know, sentient minds as like, you know, people, or as like, you know, ethical agents worthy of respect, like dolphins or cyborgs or people with, you know, genetic diseases or something that may not identify with the category of human, whatever arbitrary bullshit category that is.
Or all the other sentient people that you didn't.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
Yeah, there's a good
argument. Sure. Yes.
Let's talk about the animals, Bill.
Exactly. My point is that the critique of humanism is not going far enough is a valid critique. It's one that I share in, but this gets twisted around by people like ITS who take the kind of like, oh, everyone who reads continental philosophy already knows that humanism is like this terrible thing that only like terrible dumb people would ever possibly support. And then twist kind of like what that definition means or what is the negative thing about humanism to end up being the positive things about humanism, the caring about people that you don't know necessarily, part of humanism. So it's this kind of flip that happens. And when you press them, I mean, not ITS, but when you press a lot of people in that who have that kind of like anti-humanism critique in the eco-extremist vein or the anti-sub-nihilist vein, they will oftentimes retreat back to the, oh, look at, nationalism is so bad because of war. Humanism is so bad because humans domineering other minds is bad. And like, we can agree with that, but that doesn't mean that like all humans should be killed. It doesn't mean that like you shouldn't care about any living thing. You should just go around hunting and murdering for sport, right? Like they're completely different sorts of arguments, but it's a, there's a clear fish, like a fallacious shift between the two.
I guess for me, it was just, I just wanted to counter the sort of narrative that like this pro, like a lot of, I've just been seeing a lot of pro ITS stuff or, you know, like Free Radical Radio has been like doing podcasts where they're just reading off a news or reading off ITS communiques and like, mm-hmm. I don't know. I think that just to counter that narrative, I think is important. So.
And I think it's good, but I also think that we should keep in mind that almost nobody outside of this like tiny milieu of idiots is like seeing ITS in a positive way that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
And like, for instance, last night I was with a friend from, you know, from Greece who I was talking to about this. I was like, oh yeah, I'm about to do this podcast on this. And she was just like, I don't believe you. she was unfamiliar with ITS, but she was like, that's not real. There's no way. And then like read some of the stuff and was just like, okay, no anarchist would ever, like, there's just this is just way too outside of like our beliefs. I mean, I don't know, at this point I'm just sort of like that whole group around the nihilism in the Bay, they're like halfway between anarchism and ITS already. Like,
I'd
they don't
probably
really get a seat.
I'd say a lot of them are a bit further than halfway. I mean,
you yeah, maybe. I'm not as entrenched in their activities, but they really don't seem like anarchists to me either. Maybe self-identified, but you know.
I guess the thing that really like concerns me about this whole shit is that the way that that LBC has kind of waged a propaganda campaign on behalf of that bullshit.
Yeah.
And the way that a lot of new kids come into anarchism, and don't really get a good firm foundation, and soak up kind of like, cause there was always kinds of like problematic rhetoric that we adopted opportunistically in given situations, like make total destroy or things like that. And then kind of like just, like normalize to that bullshit, or to bullshit that's derived from those kinds of quick rhetoric that we were using, and there, I mean, like, I, there's also a sense in which like it's the kind of 80s punk edgelord thing still continuing on, and the alt-right is totally that, right? Like they're totally in line with that, the kind of shitty Bob Black,
I'm just going to offend people and call people the N-word and be a douchebag. And all I value is kind of aesthetics and immediacy, shallow impressions, emotional affectations, coolness points, personal freedom, not like freedom of all, that kind of thing. So I think that that's always kind of been present, maybe more so in the North American anarchist milieu. But it's concerning to me because it's getting an ideological footing that threatens basically the entire anarchist project. I kind of feel like if that kind of Orwellian use becomes normalized, we're just fucked. So
yeah, I think we're far away from it actually normalizing within anarchism. I think that there's always been people in anarchism that end up being pushed out of anarchism.
Although it's totally fine to keep pushing them.
Yeah. Like you said, they're already starting to not identify as anarchists, which is good.
But they do. But then there are still things like LBC. Like, I know somebody from Tucson who went to go to Oakland to intern with LBC or something. You know, like some noobish anarchist who was just like, oh, mm-hmm. cool. And for those kind of people, yeah, it would be,
man,
it's good to keep, you know, keep reiterating that that isn't an anarchist perspective.
Right.
Right.
That's, you know, a right wing perspective that, you know, creeps into anarchism from time to time or creeps into the anarchist social scene. And then we have to like vehemently and voraciously push it out. Whenever it happens.
We should wrap it up by remembering that time when somebody called on A News called Will the Cuck of North American Anarchism.
Sitting in a bathroom stall with a marker in her hand, scribbling down the words to a favorite song by her favorite band. She hopes someone will read them and maybe they'll understand how it feels to care so much it hurts, fight so hard you shake, to love so intensely that it scares you, to build so much that something breaks. She knows that she's not the only one. Sometimes it sure feels that way in a little college town in Ohio. So there's a song that she sings every day. I want something better than this, and I'm not sure exactly what it is, but I think that we could build it if we try together. And if we all sing do 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 do. Miles away, down I-70, there's a boy sitting in a room full of patches and PCP, and the kids all drink the same beer, and they talk about anarchy, and he wonders if he's the only one who remembers what that used to mean. And the punk rock band plays on long into the night. These days the kids with the empty eyes hardly even put up a fight. And he watches as his friends move up and slowly start to die, sticking needles in their arms. Because punk rock boys never cry and sing, I want something that's better than this. And I'm not sure exactly what it is, but I think that we could build it if we try together. If we all sing, trying to find one another through a system that keeps us apart, to match the weapons that we hold in our fists with the passion that we carry in our hearts. And we know it's gonna take a long time, and we know that we'll fuck up along the way, but I've got a feeling that we're winning. It's either more and more and more of us say,
sorry, it was an accident.
You're like seriously jerking off your keyboard or something.
No, I'm sorry.